and welcome to Mregashira, a podcast that communicates with communicators. This episode is brought to you in association with DigiTales. I am Namita Ramani Sharma, your host for this episode. Since ancient times, stories have been our means of understanding the world and sharing experiences and passing on the wisdom. In the world where attention spans are shrinking and advertising is universal, stories have the ability to transcend the transactional nature of business, emotions, build trust, and create a lasting impression like no list of features or benefit could ever do. Today we have with us a well-known business storytelling coach, organizational consultant, personal branding strategist, Ms. Soundari Mukherjee, with us. She's a CEO of Soundbites 11, an organizational consultancy. Welcome, Ms. Soundari.
Hi, Namita. Lovely to speak with you. And what an amazing range of podcast episodes and speakers to be here with you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Soundari. Glad to hear that from you. So you've been actually working with a lot of leaders and teams to harness the power of storytelling to drive business outcomes. In the areas of change management, personal branding, cross-cultural intelligence, DI initiatives, among others. So please tell us about your journey so far.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And one of the meanings of Mregashira is to have that sense of adventure, excitement and intuition. So it lends itself nicely to the whole communication piece as well. Communication skills have always been important and it's very critical for creating positive work experiences. At a workplace, you want to be listened to, you want to be understood by everybody around you. But in today's world, we are faced with what I call the ACR challenge, which is A for attention, because we have an information overload, we have content richness, and we have a distracted population. C is for comprehension, because a lot of the organizational speak, a lot of the departmental jargons, make it complicated. You know, when we were in schools and all, we had a lot of credit given for learning big words. But as you go into the workplace, it's more about how can you simplify the complex. So we have a comprehension challenge. And then we have, more importantly, the retention challenge. Being able to remember and retell so that there is alignment. So as a leader, when I am speaking, I want somebody to remember and align themselves to the organizational goals. So, I mean, if you have to split it from a personal, professional and societal level, on a personal level, when you share anecdotes, you give a glimpse of yourself, a sneak peek into who you are as a person. On a professional level, it helps build great connections and changes the quality of conversations. And at a societal level, building the skills to tell stories really changes the way we look at the world. They can inspire action, transform societies, and hopefully make the world an equal place, right? And that's the work I've been doing, to craft these strategies for organizations, communicate within and outside the organization. You know, I really like the work that there's a person called Marshall Gamm. He's, I think, still a Harvard professor, and he talks about what a story constitutes. So stories are very specific. They evoke a very particular time, place, setting, the mood, the color, the sound, the texture and taste kind of thing. So the more you communicate this specificity, the more power your story will have to engage everyone around you. Mm-hmm. So it's the specificity of the experience that gives access to that universal insight that they contain. And I know that I'm giving a generalized view of it. But if I can just share an example about it. And we talk a lot about data and storytelling as well. So not to preempt things. How to move from, a data-first culture to an audience-first culture. So while data is important, a lot of the leaders sometimes are allergic to telling stories and stick only to data. And you need both. So as a leader, how do you set the context? How do you build the connection? How do you drive outcomes? So there's this institute called Annenberg Inclusion Initiative. It's a think tank. And it works on looking at diversity and inclusion in the entertainment space. So they did a research and they found out that only 17% of the recent 120 animated movies saw female characters as lead or co-lead. So if I were to ask you, have you watched the movie Cars?
Yes, I have, yeah.
So if I were to ask you to guess the percentage of males talking in the movie Cars, what percentage would that be?
So I think it's around 60%. No?
Mm-hmm. It's actually 90%.
Oh my God.
The characters in the speaking lanes are 90% male and 10% female.
Oh
so
my
Jessica
God.
Hyde, who's a script supervisor with Pixar, she noticed this discrepancy, and so she went to check the data across all Pixar animation movies. And it was stark. Like in Toy Story, the first one, there was only a mother character, a sister character, and Bo Peep, who were female. The rest were all male.
Wow.
And we might think, why is this a problem? It's an animation movie, right? Why is it a problem? Yeah. But we live in a world of imagination. As humans, we are always projecting ourselves in the characters that we see. What happens as a result is that we look at Lightning McQueen from the movie Cars. Maybe, of course, we see a car, but we also think about Owen Wilson, who voiced it, and a white male. So while we can imagine that cars can talk, we can't imagine female NASCAR racers.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God.
So Jessica's work was that penny drop moment. You know, and it really helped Pixar increase diversity among their characters created for their movies and stories, which are more like how the real world is. 50% women, so we want to see that many characters. So what she did, interestingly, was she had handed out charts and graphs and all that to take the emotion out when she presented it to the executives, and the evidence was staring right at their face. So they put a plan in place to rectify it, and all the technical folk, everybody rallied around her. And Josh Miner, who was the CTO, he said that, you know, oh yeah, every time there's a roadblock, he'll say, oh, we have a tool, we'll make this work, we'll track the data, we'll do this. So you have a great example of somebody taking data, sharing context, and creating a clear narrative, causing not just people but an organization to move towards inclusive action.
So you basically meaning to say that you will have to flip the way you're telling the story as per the audience.
It's always audience first.
Yeah.
Who are we telling the story to? And that is sometimes actually a challenge in a podcast like this. Because you don't know who's listening. You know, keep it relevant for everybody so that there's a connection. Everybody's able to build those story skills. So it's always audience first. But bringing the data to nourish it. You know, Brené Brown, who's like everybody knows her, talks a lot about vulnerability. She also mentioned that stories are data with a soul. And that's what we want to do. We want to add the soul to the data and bring that narrative to so that it can drive action.
So do you think we should define that women are better storytellers?
How controversial do you want to get today?
Yeah, that's what.
But I mean, I think you have a great point on not just women in storytelling, but it's always, they say, right? So when you own the narrative, you get to write it.
Absolutely.
And women have traditionally have always had that issue. We can't, what we can't see, we can't own that narrative, so we don't know what's happening. So I think we need to really drive that change. So I think about, when I think about this, you know, it otherwise sounds like a motherhood statement, right? When we say, be the change you want to see and all that, we get.
Yeah.
But what does that look like in action? Whenever we want some information, what do we do? Today, we might ask ChatGPT, but normally we Google it. And when you Google information about, let's say I type Namita, then, you know, the first few entries would be, typically we'll have one of them will have a Wikipedia entry or a web page. But what if the information doesn't pop up about this person who might be doing a great job?
Yeah.
So Jessica Wade, who is a physicist at Imperial College London, she decided to change that. And she said, as a woman in science, I find that, you know, I'm in the minority. So I think about writing stories of a lot of the women scientists. But she went to this event and she met this lady called Kim Cobb, who's a climatologist. And she comes back home and she Googles her name. And when she Googles, she finds no information about this person who's such an eminent climatologist. So she decides that, okay, I'm working in a physics laboratory during the day, but the night she would spend 2 hours every day and she would create a wiki page about these scientists.
Wow.
So from 2018, she's been doing this. She's been writing about the scientists that she meets, the women scientists that she sees in the conference. And her idea is that, you know, little girls are Googling something, let's say, about sea urchins.
Yeah.
They will click through and they will land on this wiki page of this awesome woman scientist who has contributed to it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that person would have been invisible. So she's...
Get inspired.
Yeah. And she's created about 2,000 pages at the rate of one per night working at her home. So really taking ownership of creating that narrative, that content. And she did a page on this person called Gladys West. Gladys is a 92-year-old black American mathematician. And she had been working from 1956. And she was one of her calculations. She worked on Navy navigation systems. And her calculations were one of the initial work that led towards GPS. But she was nowhere in the wiki. So Jessica created a wiki page for her. And she put a wiki page online. I think it was in February 2018. And in May 2018, she started popping up everywhere, the name. And BBC named her the top 100 women in the world. She was inducted into the US Air Force Hall of Fame and so on and so forth. And that wouldn't have happened if, of course, she did all the work. Gladys West did all the work, but Jessica did the job of putting her on the map.
I mean, this basically leads to something that we really need more women like her. And then we also want ourselves to talk about, you know, what we have achieved for ourselves. Why are we shying away? Like, why are women shying away from telling their stories? I don't know, you might be tracking to a lot of women leaders. Do you see any sort of difference in terms of how a men tell their stories and how a women tell their stories? I'm so sorry, I'm getting into this a little more.
No, not at all, not at all. I think it's a valid point, but I also think it's a perception. Sometimes, you know, I feel, and this is my feeling, everybody's individual reality may be different. I feel that sometimes people keep talking about, just for example, the imposter syndrome. I don't know whether it's really true or it's sort of a reinforcing thing because a lot of people are talking about it. So I feel women, as much as men, share stories, and we do it organically in every context. In the work context, I think everybody shies away sometimes from sharing stories because the word story has got that association with make-believe and fairy tales and something to do with our childhood. In business storytelling, which is the area that I work in, it is conversations, those small anecdotes that happen on a day-to-day basis that we talk about. So we don't really say, I'm going to tell you a story and share it. We just jump into it and share that. We say, you know, last evening when I was walking down the road, I met this person and then this happened. And that's how the narrative goes. So it's just, you know, it's just sharing in the course of work, not creating that special moment or creating that zone saying, oh, this is story time or anything like that. And a lot of people, and I think everybody, male and female leaders, do that very efficiently. I mean, if you talk about, you know, things like how do senior leaders tell stories? Again, I mean, there are men and women doing it. I can talk about, there's this lady called Jo Allison who talks about her journey when she was the chief operating officer of Tourism Holdings Limited, which is a global motorhome rental and sales organization. And she was working in an organization which was very siloed, with the country managers running their own business units and, you know, doing their own thing. So the challenge that they were grappling with is, how do they make it easy for people to understand systems thinking, you know, the whole thinking, instead of thinking in your own centralized zone, being a little bit more, you know, don't just stay at that end of the spectrum, but really looking at the global whole for the organization. So what they did was that at their global conference, they got their people together to help them understand what they want to think about the business. And they created a model called GPS Navigator. There seems to be a thing about GPS. So she says, you know, they got the business units to think, do I have a problem or an opportunity which is unique to me? Or is it a common problem or opportunity? So do I need to just look at my work or do I need to collaborate? Do I need to communicate better? And That way, you're transferring pockets of innovation from one business to another by working together, not working siloed. So when they started this conversation, people really started to then look at, oh, I'm not just trying to achieve my own goals and my own outcomes. I'm aware of each other's business and what it means. And I saw that even at a governmental level. I mean, you're in Singapore, so, you know, the PM of Singapore was speaking at a National Day rally, and he narrated this incident that happened. On that particular day of his speech, he was inaugurating a new office called Municipal Services Office that was responsible for coordinating the work of various government agencies. Mm-hmm. So, you have various departments which are working in silos, and then there is the Municipal Services Office which are supposed to be coordinating their work. You might have heard of the Municipal Services Office.
Yes, yes.
So he talked about one particular mayor, Mayor Lavian Ling, to whom the residents had gone and they were starting to complain that one particular station, I think it's called Bukit Gumba, which is often very dirty. So one resident complained to the mayor saying that, you know, I saw this fishball stick in the walkway. And the next day when I went back, I again saw that same fishball stick still there. Nobody's cleaning this place. Our stations are very dirty. So she went and called the agency to ask why the area is not being cleared. She made several calls, she followed up and finally found out what had happened. So for a moment, just visualize, there is a walkway in the middle, okay? Mm-hmm. On the left of the walkway, there is a slope. Okay. That slope belongs to NEA, the National Environmental Agency.
Okay.
The middle path, which is called the path connector, which is the walkway, that belongs to another department. It belongs to National Parks Department. On the right of the path is the pavement, which is next to the road, and the road maintenance comes under a third department called Land Transport Agency or LTA. So the fishbowl stick was on the roadside, and the road was only being cleared every 2 days because each of these organizations, so you have three organizations looking at a small area. Each of these organizations had their own cleaners, they had their own schedules, and they did it separately. When you hear it, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's what was happening. So they clearly then went about and got it under one agency.
Agency, okay.
Can you imagine, as a mayor, if she found it frustrating, what an ordinary person would have
to serve that place. Yeah, of course.
So you can use some of these narratives to really say that we need to bridge these interagency boundaries and serve people in an integrated way. Now the PM can go on a high horse and say, oh, we need to really bridge these boundaries and just serve the public in an integrated way. The sentence makes sense, but because he shared this example, it really brings out about the lack of communication, the lack of collaboration. And sometimes we get very hyper-specialized, right?
Yeah.
Leads to siloing. So if you want to highlight this, so there are these wonderful examples which you can bring out. And I think, like I said, both Joe Ellison, who was with tourism, and the PM of Singapore, both of them do it wonderfully well.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. So, you're telling amazing stories. I'm sure you might be doing wonders with the leadership and the teams you're working with. You know, over the years, I've been convinced that the stories, the communication that we receive in the form of stories are basically striking the right chord within us. So, how do you make sure their audience, because there has been a lot of things used by a lot of automotive brands, hospitality and a lot of other things. So how do you make sure that you're creating that niche for the leadership team to talk about stories which are really striking the chords?
Right. No, I think it's a great question, because that is always the struggle, right? Are you connecting with your stakeholders? From a company point of view, it's about building trust, keeping the customer at the center of your brand. So sharing examples and experiences is always a way to pull the people, right? How do you really create that kind of storytelling culture in your organization for your leadership part of it? And to that extent, it is sometimes keeping something to the core of your purpose. How do I want to engage with my teams? And also being, I think, ruthless about, in some ways, measuring it. One of the things that is always asked about storytelling, and I'm just taking it head on, is how to measure. right? Whether the storytelling has had an impact or not.
It's a big question. How do you measure if the story is really striking the chord with your consumers?
Right. But no, so some of the complaints, say for instance, is that if you say that our leaders are not relatable, you know, mm-hmm. they're showing a lot of numbers. You go to a town hall, you listen to a lot of things. It's just data, data, data. There's no insight and we can't remember anything.
Mm-hmm.
So one way of measuring relevance is pre and post, looking at are the leaders more relatable now.
Mm-hmm.
Two, when you're looking at your sales teams, earlier if the complaint was that the sales teams are like talking brochures, they're not really connecting to the stakeholders and all that. Looking at pre and post surveys, measuring how are the conversions now? How are the sales conversions? How is the engagement? How is the relevance? What is the influence? So building in a combination of business metrics, post and pre and post, behavior change, what is the kind of engagement? These are all good tools to measure whether the storytelling is effective or not.
So basically you're saying that the results of the storytelling might be visible on the numbers or the kind of retentions that you get from the customers, right?
Right, right. Now, just for example, when you look at a presentation skills program, you would video a participant before the program to see how they are. Mm-hmm. And then you would go through the program and then you would video the participant again to see how they are. So there's a pre and post element to it. Now, the timeline of the pre and post element is, of course, very relevant. You can't expect to step into a gym on day one, look at the equipment, and then develop your gym muscles immediately. There's a timeline to it. So you need to build in that kind of a timeline for making that measurement effective.
I think it's a very vast topic. I think we should do a sort of course for our audience to really learn the whole skill of storytelling, I think. So, Sondri, you do a lot of work with your clients and, you know, what do you do to achieve mindfulness and navigating, you know, challenging times that you might come across, as in you're not able to crack the right story for the client?
I think all of us need to have a balanced life. So two things that keep me sane are my tennis and pottery. I mean, pottery, as you say, as you center the clay, you feel centered and you feel in your zone. So it helps you really build your concentration. I try not to crowd my calendar with back-to-back calls, and I have the luxury of saying it. A lot of people working in corporates definitely don't have the luxury. They feel that the calendar is not their own thing. And I always remember this visual. Of course, it helps to get to that stage. So there was this conversation between, I think, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Gates was browsing through Warren Buffett's small diary. It's like one hand-sized diary that he keeps, which is his calendar where he marks his appointments.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill goes through that and he says that in some of the pages, oh, you have nothing on this day. And then in some page, there's just one entry and so on and so forth. And I think that's one way of staying mindful, not crowding your diary out. Over COVID, there was all definitely that whole feeling of FOMO, right? There were a lot of webinars available, which you wanted to hear. You were getting access to amazing people across the world whom you didn't have access to before. So then you get into that FOMO space. But I think from there, moving on to what I call JOMO, which is the joy of missing out. So that you're not feeling overwhelmed.
And
occasionally, I do have a ROMO as well, which is regret on missing. So when I have a friend or somebody, you know, who's doing something, but they're doing it at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a regret, but I miss out. I'm not going to stay up to do it. And right. So I think just that presence. And from a leadership point of view, it's also being grounded to your purpose. Again, it's a big word. But to share an example of what that looks like, so there's this restaurant in Seattle called Canvas.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the fine dining restaurants in the West Coast and all that.
Okay.
And during COVID, for a restaurant which is fine dining, you know, where it's very important about what kind of knife you use and what kind of design you're keeping for a fork and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They decided to move away to the core of what they were. So William Candace, who's one of the founder brothers, he said that what I really love to do is to feed people. Mm-hmm. And there's no ego in it. So he converted his fine dining restaurant to a drive-thru. And in the morning, they would serve bagels. And for the rest of the day, it was a burger stand.
Oh.
Because they really wanted to make that transition of keeping their 115 employees, but also make it more relevant to what people might want.
Hmm.
You're having a pandemic. Nobody is looking at fine dining.
Absolutely.
And he says that at the core of what I do and as fine dining is, it's about caring for people with food. So set aside all the artificiality, all the fanciness, all the important status, ego, and just get to the core, the basics of what you do.
Wow.
And I think that is something for all of us also to look at. What is the core of what we do? What is the, you know, the why, the purpose? And what is a basic way in which I can show my appreciation and caring for my customers and for my work?
Wow. That's a very deep thought. Absolutely. That's a very deep thought.
And it's a very grounding experience. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's what mindfulness looks like maybe at a workplace. You know, individually it might look different, but at a workplace, probably really get into that core of what it is.
Great. I think I've had the best conversation ever.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Namita. You made it easy.
No, not at all. So, just one more question. You've told me a lot of stories and I'll try and remember each one of them after I go through the conversation, go through the podcast again. Just tell me one example where you've worked with the company or the leader and they have literally got transformed themselves and became a good storyteller and now it's the most successful brand you could ever work with.
I think lots of them. So, I do work with executives who are coming into programs and who go through, say, for product managers, for tech fellowship programs, for leaders. And I think the proof, the pudding is when they come back. So I had this executive who was doing his MBA at one of the universities and he's now working with another firm. And he's come back to say that, you know, that was, I still remember the examples that you shared. And they were amazing and they were relevant. I used it in my interviews. And now as I work with this organization, this is what we want to bring into this firm.
Wow.
And when somebody comes back to you and says that, not only, of course, it is like, you know, it's really uplifting. It's a warm message. But you know that you've made an impact.
You've made an impact, of course.
You know that there's a connection and a lot of the executives gone through this have stayed in touch, have stayed connected. And when you really, you know, take it on and then discuss it further with them and see them using it. I think as a business storyteller, my job is not to create the next J.K. Rowling. I'm not looking at you becoming a great storyteller. It is storytelling for an outcome.
Yes.
So how are you driving your business outcomes? And I always say that my big, hairy, audacious goal is to help leaders and teams be more human at work, build their brand using storytelling. So storytelling is a tool for you to drive your business outcomes.
I think that's it from my side. Hope my audience finds this useful. And thank you so much for your time, Soundari. Really appreciate you taking this time out and helping our audience to learn about storytelling.
No, thank you so much. No, thank you so much for your time and asking these questions, which made me reflect and bring out my trust that it will be useful for them and they will use it well.
Thank you.